since this Sedra has in it the parish of the Mon, which is supposed to teach us about Parnassa. On Tuesday, there was a special school to say Shnai Mikra Vechet Targum on Parshas Haman with a special tefillah for Parnassa. And you know what I think about Sgulos, so I'm not going to go back into that. And the truth is, I did it. But, don't know yet. But, like I said, it's the icing on the cake, but you need a lot more cake, so we're going to speak about the cake. In addition to that, there's another connection between Parnassa and the Parsha, the Sedra, because it says, Koshim is Elnosav Shaladam Kikriyas Yamsu, that earning a living is as difficult as splitting the Red Sea. And how do we know that? The Gemara says, let's discuss first the source, which is very, very difficult. The source is that in Tehillim, I think it's Kuf Lamed Vav, Hodu Lashem Ki Tov, the 26 Hodus, the 26 Kili Olam Chazdos, it says, L'gozer Yamsuf L'gzorim, that the Rabbanu Shel Olam split the Yamsuf into many paths. And right next to it, it says, Nosein Lechem L'chol Basar. That's what the Gemara says. So you see there's a connection between Kriyas Yamsuf and Parnassa. There's only one big problem. Between L'gozer Yamsuf L'gzorim, there are the following psukim. It's not the next pasuk. The Hevisho v'socho v'nir par v'chela v'yamsuf l'molich amal b'midbar l'makim malachim gedolim v'yarag malachim adirim l'sichon melech v'emori l'og melech haboshon v'noson arzul menachlo nachlo yisrael avdo shebishifleinu zohar lanu v'yifurkeinu mitzoreinu nosein lechem l'chol basar. So what do you mean, right next to it? And if you want to say that because it's close by, then all these other things are as difficult as Kriyas Yamsuf also. So what's the connection? What does it mean, right next to it? So, one pshat, the Marsha says that just to the same idea, here God did something for the sake of the Jewish people, to save them, and this is also the same idea, so they're together in similar concepts, but a lot of the other things also. He took us in the desert for 40 years, also the same thing. So one idea I was thinking of is, it says that there are 26 verses in this chapter of Tehillim. And it corresponds to the 26, the numerical value of God's name. And God's name is split into four letters. Yud, and then Hey, and then an Avav, and another Hey. Okay. So the first 10 verses correspond to the Yud of God's name. The next 5 verses correspond to the first Hey. The next 6 verses to the Vav, and the last 5 verses to the last Hey. Okay, now, if you count verses, okay, the verse, L'gozer Yamsuf L'gzorim, is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, the 13th verse, which means it is the third in the first Hey. It's the third verse of the first Hey. Okay, because 10 are the first Yud, and then 3 more is the third verse of the first Hey. If you go on counting, then there's 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25. Nosein Lechem L'chol Basar is the 25th, which is the fourth verse of the last Hey. So you have the third verse of the first Hey, and the fourth verse of the last Hey, there's the connection. It's right after it, meaning if you go by the letters of God's name, this is number 3 of Hey number 1, this is number 4 of Hey number 2. Okay. And there's a meaning to it. And that is that, oh well, we'll get to the meaning when I tell you what I want to say, but in any case, we'll get to that in a second. Just remember that. There's another possibility, and that is the following. If you look at the Hodu, right, it starts, Hodu Lashem, Right? That is an idea to itself. Kilion chazdo, kito. Then hodu l'Eloheinu Elohim. Hodu l'Adonai Adonim. Then, as if it would say again, hodu, la'osei niplos gedolos levado. Just leaves out the hodu, but it means, hodu, la'osei ha'shamayim bisvuna, l'rokar atzalamayim, la'osei orim gedolim. And then the next one is, es ha'shemesh l'memshel ha'sayom. That is just a sub-verse of what came before. We are praising hodu, la'osei orim gedolim. What is the Orim Gedolim? Es Hashem L'shom Shalat Hayom, Es Hayarev HaKochov M'shos V'layim. Those are not a new thing. Those three are considered like one. They're all Hodu L'Ose Orim Gedolim, and then it explains what the Orim Gedolim are. Then we have Hodu L'Makim Mitzrayim Bivchoreim. Right? And L'Makim Mitzrayim Bivchoreim has now some sub-verses. V'yotzei Yisro Mitochem. It's not Hodu L'Vayotzei Yisro Mitochem. Now it's a sub-verse. It's Hodu L'Makim Mitzrayim B'Chorehem and V'Yotzei Yisro Mitochem B'Yad Chazak of Ezra and Netuya are two sub-verses of that. Okay, so those three verses go together just like the ones before. Now we have L'Gozer Yamsuf L'Gzorim, and then there's a few sub-verses. The Hever Yisro B'Socho V'Nir Par V'Chil B'Yamsuf. Right, so those are sub-verses. Then L'Molich Amo B'Midbar. Then Hodu L'Molich Amo B'Midbar. And then L'makei Malachim Gedolim. And then, Vayarug Malachim Nadirim, this is all not new verses, not Hodu, but it's explaining what came before. L'sichon Melech Lemori, L'og Melech HaBoshon, V'norsan Arzal L'Nachla, Nachla Yisrael Avlo, Shebeshifleinu Zohar Lanu, Vayifrkenu Mitzoreinu. And then, Nosein Lechem L'chol Basar, right, comes after those sub-verses. So really, it's not so far away from the Gozer Yamsuf L'Gzorim. There's only one other thing, the Hever Yisrael, it's not even, there's only one, L'molich Amo B'Midbar, is the only other one, and the Nosing Lechem L'chol Basar is part of the idea of L'molich Amo B'Midbar. The Rebbeinu took us to the Midbar and satisfied our needs for 40 years. And the Nosing Lechem L'chol Basar. So it is right next to it. Because right after the Gozer Yamsu L'Gzorim, the next lift is L'molich Amo B'Midbar, and the explanation of that is Nosing Lechem L'chol Basar. So it's Mamash right next to it, according to this setup of the thing. Okay. In any case, they asked the question, and I'm going to give you a few of the answers that other people say, but I don't think there's any question. The question is, to whom was Kriyas Yamsuf hard? Was it hard for the Jews? Was it hard for the Egyptians? Was it hard for God? Obviously, Kriyas Yamsuf is not hard for God, right? God do it easily. So what does it mean, it's kashim ki Kriyas Yamsuf? That earning a living is as difficult as splitting the Red Sea. For who? Who is it difficult for? So there are a variety of answers, which I'm going to give you a potpourri of them. That's a nice word. Of these answers. And I'm going to tell you that I don't think there's any question, because it doesn't mean that. It means something else completely different. And then we'll go back to what I wanted to say. Okay. Who is it hard to? So one idea is that earning a living is as hard as splitting the Red Sea, as hard as it was for the Jewish people, meaning the following. Really, the splitting of the Red Sea was not hard at all. It just appeared like that, right? Because God had already made a condition with the sea that it was going to split from the time it was created. So all of this, the script was already written. God knew that he brought the Egyptians to the Red Sea to drown them, right? God knew the script. But he didn't let the Jews in on it. So it appeared to them as if they were really big tzoras. Why did God do that? Why didn't he tell them, look, don't worry about it, everything's going to be okay, right? Why did he make them, you know, shake in their boots with the Egyptians behind them, the sea in front of them, and the desert on the sides, and they had no way out? The answer is, Hashmi'ini es kolech. The Rebbeinu Shlom wanted them to daven. He wanted them to reach out to him. They benefited from that. What?
Why did he send Mati Tzakelah? He said, now is no time to daven, go.
No, for Moshe at that time. The time before that, the people daven plenty. But for Moshe Rabbeinu, now's the time to lead them through. Now everything's finished. So he wanted them to daven. Right, and that's what happened. And they felt that they needed the Rabbanu. They turned to him. It strengthened their emunah. Really, almost everything is like that. Why do we need parnasa? Why isn't the Rabbanu Shalom, if everything is already, you know, what a person is going to earn is already set aside, why doesn't God make it easy for us? And, you know, tell us ahead of time it's coming, you just wait, it's in the mail or whatever. Why is it, it seems so difficult? Same thing. Because the Rabbanu Shalom wants us to daven. He wants us to turn to him. Right? He doesn't want to make it look easy, even though the script is already written. We have another place we see in Rashi in the beginning of the Torah. It says that it didn't rain because there was no human beings yet to recognize the goodness of rain and daven for it. That means it doesn't rain because trees and vegetation need rain to grow. Because God could have created trees and vegetation that don't need rain to grow. They could have had their moisture like it has before the rains. Eid yalam in haaretz, right? A mist. Constant mist that would keep them watered. So why do we need rain, and why sometimes doesn't rain and whatever? Because the Rosh wants us to daven. All of that. It says that by there's an Aruch Chaim HaKadosh. It says that Rivka and Yitzchak davened because Rivka was an akara. He said it should be the opposite, because Rivka was an akara. That's why they davened. He said no. The reason she was an akara is because the Rosh wanted them to daven. He knew that she was going to have a child. He knew he was going to give her children, so why didn't he make it difficult for her? Because he wanted them to daven. He wanted them, the davenings, for their sake. All these things, we see the same thing. The same thing goes with Parnassa. And I think that is one of the simonim of the mon. You know that they kept an omer of the mon in a flask, and later, generations later, Yirmiyah and Navi, people came and said, we have to earn a living, we can't learn Torah, there's no time to learn. We're too busy earning a living. And they took out the Tzimtzenes Haman, they took out this flask of Man, they said the Rosh provided Parnassa for our ancestors, he can do it now too. It always bothered me, and what's the proof? There was Man then, there is no Man now. But I think the proof was something different, a different message completely. They only had one day's supply of Man, and if they tried to save it, it would rot, get wormy. How did they save Man for hundreds of years? How come it didn't rot? The answer is, the teva of man is really not to rot. It's a spiritual thing. It didn't even have any waste. There was nothing to rot. But God made it rot every day so they'd have to come the next day. That's what he showed them. This man can last for hundreds of years, so why didn't it then? Why every day did they have to come, and if they tried to save it, it got rotten? Because the Rebbe wanted it to appear like they needed constantly to reach out to him. But it was only in appearance, because if he wanted to, he could have made the man last every day just like it lasted hundreds of years now. That's the lesson. And therefore, it was difficult. It's as difficult as Kriyas Yam Suf, meaning it's apparently difficult. But really, the script is written. Really, what you're going to make, you're going to make. What you deserve, you're going to get. And it only looks difficult, just like Kriyas Yam Suf looked difficult. That's one answer that they say. Who says that? The Asura Lemeya. I don't know who that is, whoever it was, that's what he said. Okay. Another idea. It's as difficult as the splitting of the Red Sea, means that the Rabbanu Shalom split the Red Sea. The Jewish people didn't really have to do too much, right? Hashem Yelachim Lachem Atem Techarishon. Same thing. The difficulty of Parnassa, you only are fulfilling a condition. But really, it's the Rabbanu Shalom. It's just like the Rabbanu Shalom split the sea and we didn't split it. So too, the Rabbanu Shalom brings Parnassa and we just fulfill the condition. We have to make our Ishtavlos. But we're not actually causing the result. We're just, what's it called, setting the stage for God to do his part. Okay, that's another idea. It's similar to that. Another idea was that it was difficult for the Egyptians. Earning a living is as difficult as the splitting of the Red Sea was to the Egyptians. What does that mean? Sometimes people make it difficult for themselves when it comes to earning a living in the following way. They see somebody else is successful at something, and they say, you know what? If they can do it, I can do it. And they copy them, and they think that just because they were successful, I'm going to be successful too. That's what happened with the Mitzvah. The Mitzvah saw the sea split, Jews went in. Well, Jews can go in, we went too. Didn't realize that the Jews are going to get out, and you're not going to get out. Right? So too, sometimes people try to copy other people, and they don't realize that the Rav Avishon provides parnasa according to what a person deserves, and each person has a different thing in what their parnasa comes from. And just because somebody else was successful, some doesn't mean you're going to be successful, and just the opposite is also true. Just because they weren't successful doesn't mean you're not going to be successful. Right? Every person is different, and don't think you can go on, in somebody else's footsteps or on somebody else's apron strings or whatever. Okay. Next, the idea. It was difficult for God to split the Red Sea. Why? Because the Jews really didn't deserve it. Halalu obdeavodazor of Halalu. The Sarish of Mitzrayim, the angel of Mitzrayim, complained. The Jews are also idol worshippers. Why are you splitting the sea for them? Even more than that, right, they say the difficulty is in the fact that God knew that they were going to take the riches that they got from the Red Sea and make a golden calf. But he still gave them the Parnassus. God knows that sometimes giving a person a parnassus is going to use it for the wrong things. Or it's going to make him think that he's a self-made man. But God still gives a person the parnassus. And it's difficult for him to do it, knowing that person has free choice and he could use it for the wrong thing. That's another possibility. Another possibility is that sometimes what makes earning a living difficult for a person is not so much what he earns or he doesn't earn, what somebody else earns. Sometimes it's harder for a person to swallow that somebody else has and that not that he doesn't have. Famous story of a person came to the Rav after Pesach and he had a big whiskey collection or whatever and he forgot to sell his chametz. And he had hundreds and hundreds of dollars worth of whiskey. He didn't sell it. And the Rav looked for a heter, looked for it, and he said, look, I can't find any heter. You're going to have to pour out all the whiskey. It's all awesome. You can't do anything with it. You can't sell it. You can't get any enjoyment from it. Just pour it down the drain. So he took all these. I have no idea what whiskey is. Alan Friedman can tell you that I don't touch anything stronger than grape juice. Once in Chas Torah, they gave me something and dared me to drink it. They told me it was some really expensive scotch. I got myself all psyched up to it for I don't know how long. And then finally I gulped it down. It was apple juice. but in any case, I don't... But you know, some of these red labels, black labels, blue labels, hundreds of dollars worth of stuff. And the man thanked the Rav, shook his hand, thank you for the schus of being able to follow the Torah, even if it meant them losing hundreds of dollars. A few months later, the guy had a din Torah with somebody over $25, $50 or whatever, and the Rav paskened that the other guy was right, and this guy has to give up the $25. The guy got upset, started cursing out the Rav. So Rav said, could you stay here after the other guy leaves? I want to ask you something. He said, you know, a few months ago, I paskened something that cost you hundreds and hundreds of dollars. You shook my hand with a smile and thanked me for giving you the schus of being able to follow the Torah, even though it cost you a lot of money. And now for a measly $25, I get all these curses. He says, you don't understand. Then I lost hundreds of dollars. I can deal with that. This guy gained $25. I can't deal with that. So sometimes it says the angel of Mitzrayim said, look, they're both over there with the Zohar. What do you want, to save the Egyptians? No. Okay, the Egyptians deserve to be drowned, but the Jews deserve to be drowned too. It wasn't so much to save the Egyptians. It was that the Jews should also drown. That already is what's hard about earning a living. Sometimes it's harder for you to swallow that somebody else is making it than you're not making it. That's the difficulty. Another idea is, the Maharal says, that just as hard as it is to split water, which is one entity, into two entities, it's just as hard to match up a person with his parnasa. Because the parnasa becomes part of you. It's hard to take two things that are separate and make them one, as hard as it is to take one thing that's one and make it separate. That's why it says the same thing by Shiduchim. It's also as difficult as splitting the Red Sea. But part of that also is that people think that they're losing because somebody else is gaining. Not so much I can't forgive somebody else, but it's on my chesed. Right? It's like Cain in heaven. Cain thought that his sacrifice wasn't accepted because Hevel's was. It was on his chesed. So he's mad at Hevel. God told him, I'm not doing you. I could accept both of them, I could reject both of them. You're not losing because he gained. That's what people think sometimes. They're losing because somebody else gained. So the Rabbanu Shalom tells you that there were 12 paths in the sea. Nobody was on anybody else. Everybody had their own path. Nobody was on anybody else's cheshbon. Okay, those are some of the answers, a sampling of the explanations of what was hard. Hard for who? So some say hard for the Egyptians, hard for the Jews, hard for God, whatever. I don't think it means that. There's another meaning to word kashe. Kashe can mean difficult. And then the question is, who was it difficult for? But there's, for instance, as Chazal says, Talmidei Chachamim shebe'eretz Yisrael koshim kibarza. It doesn't mean that they're difficult. It means that they're hard as iron. They're strong. That's what it means. Kashe mizolnosav shalavim ki kriyas yamsu. Just like kriyas yamsu. With such a clear idea that there's a God. That even the shifcha, the handmaiden, could point and say, Zekeli van Veil. They saw God clearly after Kriyas Yamsu. Right? They saw there's a God in the world. So, kasha, mizolnosav, if you want to know where you can see as substantial and hard, clear evidence of a God, just like it was Kriyas Yamsu, you can see it in the Earning a Living. If you keep your eyes open, you'll see that there's a Rabbanu Shalom who controls the world, because a lot of people do the right things and they don't make a living, and the people do the wrong things and they do make a living, and sometimes you think you're going to make a living from one place and it comes from a completely different place that you weren't expecting. So you see that it's not your doing that there's a God in the world. So another place where you see that is Shaduchim. Right? That Shaduchim are sometimes come from the most unexpected places or whatever, and that's where you find the shidduch. So if you want to know what is as hard, not difficult, but as hard and strong as evidence that there's a God, like Kriyas Yamsu, you'll find it in earning a living, you'll find it in making shidduchim. And that's why, going back to what we started with, it says the idea of Kriyas Yamsu was the third verse of the hay, the first hay of God's name. What does that hay make? The yud and the hay, the first letters, make yihyeh, the future, and haya, the past. So this is the third letter of the future and the past. If you look at Kriyas Yamsuf in the past, you'll see there was a God, because you see what happened then. And Kriyas Yamsuf has an effect till Tchias HaMeisim, for the future too. Oz Yosher Moshe, the future. So Kriyas Yamsuf is past and future. But where do you see God in the present? That's the fourth verse of the last hay. The last hay is Vav hay, is Hoveh, is the present. In the present, you can see God in earning a living. In the past and the future, you can see him in Kriyas Yamsuf. That's the meaning. That's what this is. Kosha ke Kriyas Yamsuf. Okay. Any questions on this? And I'll go to another idea. Yeah.
The Gemara Kedushin about you should make an easy living.
Right. Easy means that it says easy and clean. Right? Honest and easy. Easy means that you don't have to put in more effort than is necessary. Right? That you're not going to have to... A person, if he believes that the Rabbanu Shalom provide his living, and he just has to fulfill a condition, a prerequisite, then he'll put in what's a reasonable hishtadlus and be satisfied with that. But if he thinks that he's the cause, he's going to put in an inordinate amount of effort because he thinks he's causing his living, and the more he works, the more he'll get. The Chofetz Chaim compares that to a person who has a barrel of liquid, okay, and he put in a spigot, and he thinks he'll get double the amount if he puts in another spigot. Not going to help. It's just one amount, one barrel. That's it. Right? You put another spigot, you're just going to get the liquid a little faster, but it's going to be the same liquid. Right? Or it says that a person was carrying a load on his shoulders, and he's waiting for a ride, and somebody stops his wagon and tells him to get in. After a while, he looks back and sees the guy still has a load on his shoulder. He says, why don't you put it in the wagon? He says, nah, you're doing me a favor of taking me. I take my load also.
No.
He said, why, sir? If God is carrying you, he's carrying your load also. Hashlech al Hashem Yehovcha, right? If he's keeping your heart beating and keeping you going, he'll keep you alive with your parnasa too. Don't think that God can take care of your bodily functions, right? Your heartbeat and your digestion, but he can't give you a living. It's absurd.
That seems to go against the idea of being
hard.
It's true.
No. Hard means that you don't get it just for free. You have to put in some effort. But the more you understand that you're only fulfilling a condition, you don't have to put in more effort than necessary.
So that's the difficulty in the understanding.
Right, exactly. Because it really wasn't hard for Klal Yisrael. Right. It was just hard in their perception if they didn't really believe that the script was already written. Okay, any other questions on this? Go to something else. There's a Svarno. I don't know if I even want to add too much to this. I just want to read you this Svarno. And what is real chinuch? And it applies to parents. It applies to teachers. It's unfortunate that not everybody, maybe they know the Svarno, but don't put it into practice. The Svarno says like this. What happened was Moshe Rabbeinu told the Jewish people in no uncertain terms that this is Shabbos. There's not going to be any mon. Don't go out and collect the mon. Okay? What do the Jews do? They go out to collect mon. Right? Jews are Jews. You know what's it called? You tell them not. And so the Sfarno says, like, so God says to Moshe Rabbeinu, Ad onna me'antem lishmor mitzvosai. How long will you refuse to keep my mitzvahs? And he includes Moshe Rabbeinu. It doesn't say, how long will they refuse? How long will you refuse? All the you, the plural you, including Moshe Rabbeinu. So Rashi says that in Echanami, the leader is responsible. You know, when the people are punished, the leader is also responsible. The Sfarno says, no, not just that the leader is responsible. He says, Hine achet b'shmira nase bin kulchem. The chet of going out and not obeying, that there's not going to be mon, and believing there won't be mon, and not going out, was done by all of them, including Moshe Rabbeinu. Why? Ki ata afapi shelo yatzasi mem lilkol. You didn't go out to collect mon. You had no doubts. You didn't go out. That wasn't your sin. Karamta sheyetzer. You caused them to go out. You caused them to go out and look for mon on Shabbos. How did Moshe cause them? He told them not to go. He told them there won't be any mon. How did he cause them to go? Shelo limadita osam hilcha Shabbos. Vinyana. You didn't teach them the breadth and the depth of Hilchas Shabbos. Rako Marta Sheshes Yomim, Tulketu, Velo Shivas Yomim. You just told them, gather it 6 days and not seven. You didn't explain to them why. What's the idea behind it? Why can't you gather mon? Right? The Vazem Maru is Picha. Right? That's why they rebel. You tell a person, don't do it, their natural reaction is, yeah, to do it. Right? You say don't, we say yeah. Marta, you said of Yom HaShviyi Shabbos lo yevo. You said there won't be any mon. They said we want to see with our own two eyes. We don't believe it. Maybe there will be mon. We want to go and see. Right? That's not human nature. Avaloli madetem mitzvosai shebichlau malach etia lekitas amon shechayi bohalokik nishum tolesh va'avosom rishus l'shus shehi bichlau hamalach l'skamke. Had you given them a deeper understanding of why not? Not just, don't, there won't be any mon, don't go out. Right? Why can't we go out? Why won't there be any mon? What's wrong with gathering mon on Shabbos? Should have told them, Hilchas Shabbos. There's a halacha of taking it off the ground because that's where it is, if it grows from the ground. There's an issur of carrying on Shabbos. Had you told them, look, you're not allowed to carry on Shabbos, you're not allowed to harvest on Shabbos, and this is like harvesting the mon, right? And therefore it's awesome. So then they would have appreciated the depth of what you're saying. But you didn't do that. You just told them, don't be any mon, don't go out and collect the mon. But you didn't elaborate. You didn't give them a good understanding of what the prohibition was, what it entails. And then he goes on. V'soro soy, inyan ha-shabbos, v'tama, u'matn shorava oncho. He says you also didn't tell them the hashkofa of Shabbos. What's Shabbos all about? Why can't you do malach on Shabbos? What's it supposed to teach you? What are you supposed to learn from it? Right? What are the hashkafic ramifications of Shabbos? And you didn't teach them the reward and the punishment. That's a mussar. You didn't tell them how much reward they'll get if they keep the Shabbos and how much punishment they'll get if they don't keep the Shabbos. Because had you done that, right, Asher kol yodeyem yizor lishmos v'shabbos, b'lisothik. Because had you told them all the details of what the halachas of Shabbos are, and they appreciated the depth of the prohibition, and you told them the hashkafa behind Shabbos, the philosophy of Shabbos, and you told them some mussar, the punishment and reward, then who could not keep Shabbos? Somebody who understands the depth of what's prohibited, what's not prohibited, why is it like that? What's the reward? What's the punishment? And here's it from Moshe Rabbeinu. How could he not keep Shabbos? But if you tell somebody, don't do this, don't do that, it's not going to be, then the natural reaction is, why not? I want to see for myself. I don't believe you. So you caused them. Because had you taught them, had you given them some education, then it would have been different. But if you just tell them, this is the way it is, do it, whatever, how can you expect people to follow that? So we're all guilty of that to a certain degree, and we're victims of people who thought that education is, do this, don't do that, or whatever. Avadi, sometimes, you know, you have to, as a parent or as a teacher, tell children what to do and what not to do. Right? You can't, you know, go into the philosophy with a three-year-old, you know, when he wants to run into the street. Right? You have to tell him, you can't run into the street. You have to patch him if he runs into the street. Otherwise, there won't be any philosophy or no nothing because it'll be dead. So, obviously, sometimes you have to just say what to do, what not to do, and be very strict and stern. But we're talking about on the overall education, this is the method. The overall education has to be much broader and much deeper and much all-encompassing. And if you impress somebody with the total depth and breadth of what Torah is, how could they not be impressed with it? How could they not do it? It's a very interesting story. You learned it in Mora. I mean, the Rav Shom, also you learned it, what's it called? You didn't get in Har Sinai, but the Rav Shom, Shom, Lochol, Kumishpat, Shabbos, already gave them. In Mora, before the month. Okay, next.
Well, we still have the Levium. Oh, wow. Learned all
the what?
And the Levium were still learning all along, right? So they still know the right. They had the Masorah.
Okay, I don't have time for the next thing, but do something shorter, something for Tu B'Shvat. Since the next year will be before Tu B'Shvat?
Yeah, next year is
your... so maybe then we'll save it for next week. So what can we speak about here? One pshat, please. It's, yeah, okay. Yeah? Yeah.
It sounds to me that when you say it was difficult, that it would be as difficult for us to play the role that God plays. That God, it's easy for God to be done, but for us to try to do that, that's difficult.
Ah, very nice.
And it seems that sounds very good. Living, right?
But if you try to be God, right, you couldn't have done what God did by Kriyas Yamsu. Tell him he did it, and you did your part. You, what's it called, believed that he was going to do it or whatever, and you did what you were supposed to do, and the sea split. But if you wanted to take over and do what God did, you're not going to work. So it's not going to work with your parnasa either.
And what you need, like,
very nice.
Hanachshon.
What's your name?
Pam Marie. Hanachshon.
How do you spell your last name?
In
English, M-O-R-I-T-T. Very nice. I'm sorry I didn't say. Very nice. Very nice. What do we have time for here? Yeah.
The beginning of the parsha.
Oh, yeah.
Moshe Rabbeinu says, when the people complain, he says, "Where am I from?" This is complaint about this protocol.
Yeah.
Like, what do you want from me? I mean, it sounds, it's a very strange kind of answer to give. You know, like, you're complaining a lot against us.
Right, complaints against
us. I'm not myself. Complaints against the British protocol. Go complain to him. What kind of attitude does
that have? I think what Moshe Rabbeinu was trying to teach them is they were putting too much trust in them, as if they're the ones doing all of this. And they should realize the Rabban Shalom is behind you, right? All you have to do is ask. All you have to do is daven. Don't think that we're the ones that are providing it. Because it was a tremendous show of anivus, right? Don't put stock in us, right? Anachnu mo, what are we, right? Everything, you want to address your needs, the Rabban Shalom will take care of them. We're just the middlemen over here. It wasn't so much giving up the responsibility. But that's not our job. Our job is to be the middlemen. You want parnos, it comes from the Rabban Shalom. You want water, it comes from the, it doesn't come from us. That was the idea.
But Moshe was the only one who spoke to God.
Right.
He was talking to a people who cannot comprehend a concept.
Right, but that's exactly what Moshe wanted to tell them. Don't get carried away with me. It's not me. I'm just an intermediary over here. I'm just a shliach, right? A delivery man. You have to go to the boss, not to me. That was the idea. Okay, one short thing, Taka. Says, what was the Shira start? Shira Lashem ki go go. God did tremendous, wondrous things, right? Sus v'roch v'rom v'vayah. He threw the rider and the horse together in the sea. That was like the one most wondrous thing about Kriyas Yamsu. I don't know that, you know, what when Rashi says that the rider didn't fall off the horse. Usually, they're getting all mixed up in the water, the rider falls off the horse. Here, the rider didn't fall off the horse. Sus v'roch v'rom v'vayah. Yeah? That was the most wondrous thing about Kriyas Yamsuf. I mean, a little super glue, right, could accomplish that. That's not a big deal to keep the rider on the horse, right? But I could think of a lot bigger miracles that happened by Kriyas Yamsuf than the riders didn't fall. Like, if people came out of Kriyas Yamsuf, wow, you see that? The riders didn't fall off the horse, right? It's absurd. What does it mean? That's what they... One idea is the following. Everything in this world... There are riders and there are horses. Okay, the horses are the powers that seem to be accomplishing things, but the truth is it's the rider on the horse that's directing the horse. And everything is a horse to the thing above it and a rider to the thing beneath it. That's how the world works. Right? There are powers that guide other lower powers and there are higher powers that guide those powers. And the one who is the ultimate rider, who is there no rider on him, is Rochev Shamayim Baravos, is God, who rides the heavens. That's how it describes God. That's what they saw by Kriyas Yamsuf. That Sus V'Rochvo. There's no difference between the rider and the horse. They're all just secondary powers. There are no riders in this world. There's only one rider. That's the Ribbono Shel Olam. But otherwise, the rider and the horse are the same. And that was the impact of Kriyas Yamsuf. There's no other powers in this world. God split the sea and showed that he created this world, and he's the only rider. Everything else is just horses. They appear to be riders, but they're really just horses. That's the, I think that's an idea.